Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a place. This week, we'll be exploring Lebanon in a indirect sort of way. I'm joined by Ziad Hermez, owner of Manouche, a Lebanese bakery in New York City. So welcome, Ziad. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So let's go backwards a little bit before we go forwards. I want to start talking about like who you are, where you're from, and how you ended up opening a bakery in New York City.
So I'm originally Lebanese, but born and raised in Kuwait. I moved here to the U.S. for college, came to GW in D.C., lived there for about 5 years before I decided to make the move to New York. Mm-hmm. Was studying IT. I actually graduated with a master's in IT. Decided one day that, well, since I got to the U.S., I always kind of missed this food. It was a craving, and it would never end. So 10 years after realizing that I'd been here for so long, that's a third of my life, and that's absurd that I've been waiting for this type of food for so long. So one day I just decided to kind of like go and try to make it myself. And here we are today. I have a restaurant.
How did that start, though? Like, did you have your kitchen and your apartment and you were like, I'm going to start baking Lebanese food?
Exactly like that. No, it was actually more just me and a friend hanging out. And he actually was in the food business. And one day we were just hanging out and he was like, I really want to kind of do my own thing. He has a franchise. So he wanted to do his own thing. And I really just kind of wanted a manouche, which is this food that we serve at the restaurant. So we said, let's try to make one. And he had a little, very minimal experience in baking, but it was infinitely more than what I had. And we just decided to test it out. We did, failed miserably, but I liked playing with the dough for some reason. And so I just kept going at it. I kept experimenting and trying and watching YouTube videos and reading books and articles and things like that.
It sounds like a really kind of like grassroots DIY, like do it yourself kind of activity. But then you eventually built it up into a pop-up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that experience. Like, I mean, you said you didn't really have a lot of experience in the food business. So what was that like, the kind of like learning curve?
I had no experience in the food business.
Of like kind of production process. Because when you're at home making something, it's very different for yourself versus like on a scale for like
Absolutely. I mean, it started out very slow, right? Like I was in a, when you do the pop-up, nobody knows about it. So it was great to do it that way because, I would go in there and I'd only make like 10 to 15 a day at the beginning. And it kind of like let me ease into it, to that whole mass production and realizing where I had bottlenecks. And the entire experience of the pop-up was very important to the entire process because it let us test the brand and the concept and build it, right? Like we had a customer base when we opened our permanent spot.
And when did the permanent spot open?
So that opened March 6th of last year.
Okay, so year. About like a year and a half in.
Yeah.
You celebrated your anniversary in March. And so let's get more clear about like what Manouche is. I'm actually still not clear. Is it like a concept, an idea, a thing? Is it the actual like bread that you serve? Like tell me more about it.
Manouche, so it's going to be the flatbread, right? Mm-hmm. The original one is going to be topped with a mixture of herbs and spices. Thyme is the main ingredient. We call it za'atar. Okay. Now, the original manouche, the reason they call it manouche is because they would flatten this bread and they would pinch it down. And the root word is ne'ish, which is to pinch. Okay, so manouche means something that's pinched. And so they would pinch it down and they'd put their toppings on it. The pinching would, stop the bread kind of from rising too much and, opening up, because essentially if you don't pop it or pinch it or put something heavy on it like cheese, it's going to become pita bread. That's how you make pita bread. So really the base of this, I guess, would be that, but I don't like to say that because it's not what it is.
Well, I do want to talk a lot about the production process. So you talked about like liking to play with the dough. Tell me more about the dough. Cause I've been in a store recently and I've been watching kind of like the steps it goes through. Uh-huh. So tell me kind of like more about that.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously we make the dough, we portion it. We have to, everybody has to have the same weight, but it's always hand flattened. We call it sheeting. So it goes through this machine. In the beginning, it didn't go through a machine, and that was the first thing I spent the money that we earned. I would have to roll it out by hand, and even though I felt very strong after that first week, it was a little bit too much. So what happens is we take this dough ball out, we flatten it to the right size, and then what we do is we top the boards, and then we top it with whatever. Za'atar or cheese or ground beef. There's different toppings that you can put on it, and then you just throw it into the oven. And that's also my favorite part to watch. Is actually we have this open-faced oven, and you see it being baked. And
the oven, is it gas or is it?
It's what? A gas oven.
It's
yeah.
gas, and so that's obviously different. The fire from like at home as
oh,
well, like,
absolutely.
And the flavor you kind of extract from that, and also just so what's the temperature.
So the temperature is going, but I know Celsius, so it's going to be around like 300 degrees Celsius. I think that's like 650 or 700. It gets hot.
And they don't cook very long.
No. Like the za'atar cooks in like a minute, minute and 20 seconds. The ground beef will take a bit longer, about 4 minutes. But that's going to be the longest.
And when you watch them in the oven, they do kind of have like, they do like fluff up.
Absolutely. It's yeasted. It's a leavened dough.
And then you bring them out and then you add more toppings?
That's up to the customer. So we have tomatoes, cucumbers, mint, and olives. If you go to a place in Lebanon and you ask for a menouche extra, that's what you would get is those tomato, cucumber, mint, and olives. So we do the same thing here. We give the option to add those vegetables. And the majority of people do like to eat it with the vegetables. Personally, I'm a very plain person and I like to eat it plain.
And I think it's really interesting because I've kind of tried it like all different ways. That hot, if you just get like the za'atar and the cheese perhaps or something, and then you put like the raw vegetables, like cucumber, the mint, and just the kind of the result that creates, just that hot, cold, cooked, raw. I just really like it. And then what about menusha? Like it's very simplistic. Mm-hmm. I know it's very well thought out, but to me it is like very reminiscent of like a street food. So in Lebanon, is it a street food?
Absolutely. Okay. It's so Lebanese cuisine is mainly, I don't know if you've ever been to a Lebanese restaurant, but it's mainly, it's a shared type of thing. It's like family style. You go, they bring you down what they call meza, which is like, appetizers and things like that. And everything is shared. And then you go into the main course. There are very few things in Lebanon which are to be eaten by yourself. And it's going to be our street food. So the majority of that's going to be menouche, which is going to be the most popular one in Lebanon, but for some reason not represented. And then you have falafel and shawarma, which everybody knows. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the main reasons that I'm really doing what I'm doing right now is trying to teach people about something that, it was shocking to me that every time I went around trying to find it here, people didn't even know what it was.
It was like a big black hole. It's like really missing. So what's great that you kind of added that to our kind of lexicon of cuisine here in New York City and this crazy, we have a little bit of everything. So it's great that we have something new and exciting. Talk to me about any like menu expansions, because I feel like I started going there when the store first opened and I do feel like you guys do specials now, like seasonal things. And then I do feel like there's more options. I know you worked out some of the kinks with the pop-up, but how are you kind of like iterating and like adding more or like getting feedback or?
Well, so we're trying to not overwhelm people. As I said, it's education. So like right now we're trying to teach people about it. And I really don't want people coming in and ordering, something that they're comfortable with, something that they know. I really want them to try what this is all about. So in the beginning, we didn't have anything else except for za'atar, cheese, labneh, and then the lahm bi'ajin. Then we did the Za'atar and avocado, which was like a little twist. Now, you know, we always do specials because it's a good way to get people to try other things. And in Lebanon, if you go to a bakery like this, you will be overwhelmed. Like, they've got like 40 different items, because at the end of the day, it's all about the bread. And then you can top it with whatever you want. So, you know, we play around with it. It's fun,
yeah.
Right? It's really fun to do the tastings, too.
And I just want to be super clear. There is gluten in this, correct?
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. I'm getting really angry about that. I go to the store, and I'm, like, looking for bread with gluten. And I'm like, seriously, like, give me my gluten back. Everything's, like, gluten-free, gluten-free.
I was actually thinking of making some shirts that say, I heart gluten.
Yeah, or just, like, free the gluten, for Christ's sake. Jesus. I want to talk about, well, you mentioned, you know, it's about education. And I was telling you before we started the show, like, it's become my Saturday ritual. Like, I go and I watch soccer and I have like 2 pints of Guinness, and then I walk down Bleecker and I go to Minutia and I have my like my flatbread.
You sound like my dream woman.
Yeah. But what's always crazy is that it's so crowded in there. I mean, it's a small little shop, but it's very popular, and it seems like it's going very well. It's very successful. So are you, I mean, obviously you're happy. Are you surprised?
So this was one of the main things that the pop-up was all about, was testing it out, right? Like, I really thought that these were like za'atar and something, another thing that's on our menu called kishik. I felt like it was an acquired taste, but we just put it out there, and every single person who's tasted za'atar, even tasted the kishik, they just love it. And so, yeah, I mean, it's surprising to me because I just didn't expect that. I just love watching people trying it for the first time. It's one of my favorite things, just to see the expression on their face when they taste something that they haven't tried before. I try to do that as much as possible, you know, go and try new things all mm-hmm. the time. It's just, yeah.
So where are you taking it from here? Are you going to try to do other locations? Are you going
to
like,
yeah, the goal is to basically, you know, pop these up. I want to start in the city, in New York City. Mm-hmm. We're probably gonna hopefully do another one by next year. It's working out, so I don't see anywhere where this can't work now. It makes perfect sense. It's bread, it's tasty toppings. It could really work anywhere, but the most important thing is to take it slow. Mm-hmm. Me being my first time in the industry, just seeing the way things happen in New York and in the food industry alone, it's daunting, it's scary, it's exciting, but you know. Yeah, the goal is to open these up, hopefully, everywhere.
There's something interesting about the location, though, because you opened up in a very, I would say, how do I put this nicely? West Village in Soho is, you know, not known for its ethnic food.
Mm-hmm.
It's great shopping and all of those other things. But, you know, it's really interesting that it did so, it's not surprising, but it fits well into the neighborhood, I think, but it's not something that started like in Queens, where you might be like, you would think it mm-hmm. would come from or something. I don't know. I find
well,
that.
Well, if you look at the area where we opened, specifically our street, Bleecker and McDougal,
mm-hmm.
There is a lot of ethnic food there. And then, you know, there's the all the Indian food places, and, you know, there's, you know, Georgian food, and it is actually pretty diverse there. But the thing is, you know, it's really just kind of about the reason that I chose that area is, you know, students, you got the morning, mm-hmm. which is what this is. It's breakfast, you know, you've got the morning crowd, you've got the afternoon, and you've got the dinner. So and late night, you know, we're not open late night yet, but that's definitely a plan. That's also how it's begun to be eaten in Lebanon.
Okay.
After the club, it's one of the best places to go.
Sounds I can see that working out. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, but stay with us. When we come back, I'll be continuing my conversation with Ziad Hermes about Lebanon. I'm
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Harry Rosenblum, host of Feast Your Ears here on Heritage Radio Network. This is my first season as a host, but at the Brooklyn Kitchen, we've been supporting Heritage Radio for many years, and I really believe in what Heritage does. It is a fantastic network that really highlights everything that is going on in food in America, from restaurant openings to farms, to my show, where I feature interesting people with interesting stories related to food. But Heritage is a not-for-profit. We don't make any money. Most of the hosts do this because we love to do it, and we really do need your help as listeners. We'd love to have you listen, whether you can give any money or not. The website will still be up. You can still stream your favorite shows. But if you do like the programs here on Heritage Radio, we really would encourage you to go to the website, heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart in the upper right-hand corner, and give whatever you can. If you drink coffee every afternoon while you listen to shows on Heritage, then maybe you can give us the cost of a cup of coffee once in a while. If you want to become a larger member, there's all kinds of great things you get if you become a member of the station and a larger supporter. So please join me, join the Brooklyn Kitchen, join our other great sponsors, and become a member.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I'm talking to Ziad Hermes about menuche in New York City and about Lebanese culture and cuisine. So I do want to kind of pivot the conversation more to talk about Lebanon now. How often do you get back?
I like to go twice a year, but it's been tough ever since opening the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So at least for Christmas.
You still have lots of family there?
Yeah, the majority of my family lives there.
And how would you describe the cuisine of Lebanon to someone who's like has no idea, who's never encountered it?
Oh, very tasty. Like I said earlier, actually, it's mainly to be shared. Mm-hmm. For us, it's like, you know, lunch is last 2 hours. You know, it's you sit around and you talk and you know, sadly, they bring up politics a lot. That's one of the worst part of lunches.
We'll get to that
lunches.
In a minute.
But, yeah.
Saving that for last.
It's just the food is so flavorful. I don't...
Let's talk about flavor, though. Like, what are the flavor profiles that someone could expect when going to eat Lebanese food?
It's aromatic. Mm-hmm.
It's lots of spices.
They tend to use a lot of, this is mainly in desserts, but rose water and rose and orange blossom water and things like that. In the actual dishes, they do use a lot of like sumac, which is just like a dried berry, which we have also in the store. Za'atar is used. One of my favorite things, lebne, which is a strained yogurt, it's got this like tanginess to it, where like if you have Greek yogurt, it's going to be similar in texture, but it just doesn't have that kick. I'm not really sure what it is, but most Lebanese dishes have a kick to it. It's not even a spicy kick where it's hot, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Lebanese people generally handle spicy too well. We don't really have a lot of spicy dishes. But when we do have a spicy dish, it gets really spicy and I can't handle it.
Besides menuche, like, what are some of the favorite dishes? Like, when you go home, like, what are some of the things you want your family to cook for you or you want to go out and eat?
So waranab, which is going to be like grape leaves, dolma, I don't know if you've heard that one before. So
I had a Lebanese friend at my Thanksgiving, and she made them for us.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
They were wonderful. She was, like, you know, like, live tweeting, like, her actually rolling them for, hours.
Oh, it's a process, yeah.
And then we ate them in about 5 minutes, so.
Yeah, it's just so good. And then with the yogurt and the cucumbers as well, and... Yes, and there's something called kebabat, which is something that my grandmother always used to make. It's I don't know if you've ever had kibbeh before, but it's going to be similar, just boiled, and it's just wonderful. We put some lemon on it. Mulakhi is another one that I really love. Used to hate it as a kid. Now one of my favorite things.
What is it?
So mulakhi is it's kind of like it's every region kind of does it a little bit different. The way we do it at home, it's going to be soupy, and you pour it over rice and chicken with some what's it called, like toasted bread, and you put some vinegar and onions on it as well, and you just mix this all together. Mulakhi itself, I think the English term for it is Jew's mallow. And yeah, that it's like this green thing. It's so weird. It's like, it's kind of slimy.
It sounds good, but also like an experience.
Yeah. I think that might be an acquired taste.
Okay. You've mentioned a lot, but I want to be super, a stickler, I guess. Like, what are some essential ingredients for like Lebanese food? Like, what could you like not cook without besides like za'atar and rose water and, yeah.
So you're asking the wrong person. I actually don't cook very much. So I'm a...
You're an eater, not a cooker?
I would say that. And even I'm not the best eater either. I don't know how I got into this business. It's kind of shocking to me. If you talk to people and ask them about my eating habits, they to this day are like, how do you own a restaurant? You know, I know when I like something. And then I have to have that, you know, and so that's kind of how the whole manouche thing started. But, you know, I've never really cooked, anything else from the Lebanese cuisine. So, it's going to be tough for me to answer that question. I'm sorry.
And what about, the provenance of the ingredients that you use in the shop? Like, do you source like labneh and things like this from overseas?
No, not from overseas. It's tough to like dairy. You wouldn't be able to do that. But it's so actually funny enough. The company that makes our cheese and our Lebanon, our dairy products mainly, they are a company that used to be in Lebanon. And during the 70s, during the Civil War, apparently they left. And they disappeared, and my uncle was asking me, who makes your cheese? And I mentioned the brand name, and he was like, are you serious? They disappeared from here. And I was like, so they opened up shop in California.
Okay.
Yeah. So we import it from, we bring it from California, but the rest of our products, so like the za'atar, our olive oil, you know, a sumac, those things come from Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
We don't import them ourselves because, you know, we're so small, we're brand new.
Right.
Yeah, we found our suppliers. You know, eventually maybe we would love to, I would love to be able to make it ourselves.
Yeah. And I saw that you guys have Iran, which I'm assuming is like the Lebanese version. Yeah. And then there was like this, the mastic, like candies. I was like, I grabbed them.
Chewing
I was like,
gum,
what?
Yeah.
I haven't seen this since I was like in that part of the world. Let's talk a little bit more about Lebanon outside of the food space and kind of, I always talk about current affairs and like what's going on in the world. You know, the geography of where Lebanon is, it's just a precarious region. We know that. We know conflict's nothing new here. The most recent kind of big event, I guess, was the Beirut bombing on November 12th, the same day as the Paris attacks. 43 people were killed. Hundreds of people were injured, and the attacks were claimed by ISIS. We know Syria is next door. So kind of, you have a lot of family there. Like, what are your thoughts as someone who's from there? What have you been hearing? Like, how has it been affecting Lebanon?
Look, it's sad. I mean, it's sad. It happens all the time. But the thing is, it's in Lebanon, it's also become, and I hate to say this, but they've become kind of used to it, right? They live in this. So... to them, you know, a bomb goes off. It doesn't stop them from living their lives that day. They don't leave their houses. The sad thing was in France. I mean, that's the one that really, that one, you know, if I was in France, I wouldn't have been able to go out that day. I would have freaked out. They bombed places that everybody, you know, goes to. I mean, the bomb in Lebanon happened in a predominantly Shia district. I don't know anybody who lives there, you know, but it's not okay. But it makes it, you know, easier on a day-to-day basis when you know it's not happening technically around you. The thing is, the people just don't want to stop living their lives. Mm-hmm. So it's just important to just keep going, you know.
And it's a really hard conversation, I guess. But as far as the proximity to Syria, like, is mm-hmm. Lebanon like involved at all? And like, are they concerned about like kind of things boiling over? Or
I wish my brother was here; he could have this conversation.
The politics
with you.
Always come up at the table, right?
Yeah. So. And like I said, I always I butt out of that conversation. It's I don't like to talk about politics because it's just something that, you know, it's the bad. It's never good. It's just never good. And Syria is, I mean, we're a country of 4 million that are now 6 million because of refugees. And, you know, it's kind of absurd that it's, that's going on in Lebanon. And what can you do? You have to welcome these people in. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't think of it the way that I'm seeing the way that people react to it in Europe. It's just absurd. I mean, these people need a place to go. They need, you know, and for a country of 4 million to now be 6, you know, the other countries just need to look at that and kind of see what's going on.
Yeah, and so, and it went to 6 very quickly. That's also kind of like the pace that it happened at. Mm-hmm. It wasn't over like a course of decades. It's, you know, in the last 4 years. So I think that's a lot to absorb. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's talk about happier things. Tell me where Manusha is, where people can visit you, and mm-hmm. where else they can find out more about you, like online or Instagram and stuff like that.
So we're located at 193 Bleecker Street, which is just on Bleecker and McDougal in the Greenwich Village. You can find us on manusha.com. We got that. you know, we've got our Yelp page and Facebook as well. I urge you to look at our Instagram. I don't control that one, but you know, so whenever I look at it, I always need to go and have a manusha. So
it does make you hungry, that's for sure. All right, well, go check it out. That is all for Native this week. Thanks to my audio engineer, Liz Smith, and all of our sponsors. Next week, I'm going to be chatting with the team from one of New York's newest restaurants, Lucky Bee's. So be sure to tune in live right here every Thursday morning at 11 a.m.
Thank you.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.